Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and our show today is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. You can visit them at modabakeshop.com, where they have tons of wonderful patterns, or United Notions, where you can find downloadable swatches of the fabric and all kinds of other cool things. So I have to tell you about my first guest. I was immediately drawn to the fabric. Alyssa Thomas of Penguin and Fish has the most adorable fabric, all these tiny little animals, little whimsical bits. And then that took me to looking at the other things that she does. And she just has this whole sort of group of really awesome, adorable things that she creates. So I thought it'd be really fun to have her come on and talk about all things creative today. So hi, Alyssa, how are you?
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me on the show.
I am so excited. I just love all the little animals. I want to get stitching.
Oh, that's great.
Now, tell me a little bit.
We did a whole alphabet full of animals, and they're all little smiley flat guys, and it's just fun to stitch something and have something smile back at you.
Oh, my gosh, that sounds adorable. Oh, my gosh, I think that's so cute. So, and the name of your business is Penguin and Fish, which of course is just super intriguing. I mean, most people are probably asking you, I'm sure this is not the first time you've ever been asked, how in the world did you come up with a name like Penguin and Fish?
Well, it's actually from an animation that I did in college. So this is like 14 years ago or so. I was a graphic design major, but then I did a few animation projects on the side, and this animation was called The Penguin and the Fish, and it was about a little penguin and fish who bump into each other and fall in love, and they have molts together and watch movies together, and then the fish tells the penguin that he has to go migrate away, and so then the penguin and the fish are both sad. But then they end up keeping in touch with email, so it's all good. And it's loosely based on my husband and me. We figured it was appropriate for the company since we're doing it together.
Oh, that is just too funny. Did you ever think in your wildest dreams that that would be part of your whole persona down the road?
No, you know, it was just something fun that I wanted to do. I did it just to learn a After Effects program, just the animation program, and I just had a lot of fun making it, and then it just fit. We came up with a few names, and we just kept coming back to that.
It does. It's very memorable, which is always good. You know, if you need to have something quirky, have it something that's adorable and quirky so that we all remember it. Now, tell me, how long have you actually been making things? Have you been making them from childhood, or is this sort of a, you know, since you are a graphics designer as well, but, you know, just the physical making?
Oh, I've been making just things. I can't even say one specific thing because it's just things. I need to learn how to keep making things. And I've been doing that since I was just super little, since as long as I can remember. And I know everyone that would give me presents of things to make, and it was just kind of my thing for sure. And you know, I think it's kind of based on just wanting to learn new things and seeing people, you know, doing something. I'm like, wow, how'd they do that? And I had to figure it out. So it was just that process. And that's kind of how I got into embroidery too. I remember my babysitter came over once, and she had a cross stitch. And I was just sitting next to her watching her stitch all the stitches, and I'm like, I have to learn how to do this. So my mom and I went to the craft store the next day and got myself a little Christmas ornament or whatever they had, and after that I was just making one cross stitch after another.
You know, I can really relate to that, and I bet a lot of people can. You know, you see something being done, even within like the whole realm of quilting, you know, you see a technique you've never tried before, you're like, wow, sure. I really want to do that. I want to be making those things.
Yeah, and Pinterest and blogs and all
Mm.
that right now are just, make you want to do more and learn more. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, Pinterest is scary. It makes me want to redecorate and paint my house. You know, it's like.
Oh, I know. Well, it's making us want to redo our yard and our bathroom, so
Yeah.
that could get dangerous, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Totally. You do a lot of things, like you just said, you crochet, you knit, you do all kinds of crafts. But what sort of drew you to the stitching and the sewing as kind of your focus for your business?
I was making these crocheted bears that had little letters on their tummy, and I was doing that for a little while, and I'm like, oh, I just don't know how I can turn this into a business, really. And I was also sewing these plush toy kitties, which I still make and I love making. But doing both of those things, I felt like I wasn't drawing as much anymore, and I was really kind of missing it. And this is about the time when I started to see people selling digital patterns online, and I'm like, oh, this is perfect. I'll do hand embroidery patterns because it'll allow me to draw and it'll still allow me to craft and make things and do something tangible. So it was really to get into drawing again. And that's kind of where the embroidery patterns came. And so I set a job for me. I'm going to do every letter of the alphabet. And as I was doing it, I was posting them. And then I heard about Quilt Market while I was still making them. And I had never heard of the International Quilt Market before, the trade show. And so I decided, okay, I'm doing that. So I had to, it was in like 2 months. It was a little ridiculous for me to think I was going to do that. But it happened to be in my hometown that year, and I'm just like, I'm going to finish the rest of these embroidery patterns and get them done and show them at the show. And that's where I feel like my business sort of really began, was
Oh my
after that trade
gosh.
show.
You're like Superwoman. That's like
Oh.
nobody said you can't do that, so there you go, right? That's
Yeah, well, I'm like, it's in town. I might as well do it. I don't have to pay for, airplane and
Right.
shipping, so let's just get it done.
Oh my gosh, that's so fun. I actually people need to go out to Penguin and Fish, the spell A-N-D, and go to the printables and see the alphabet, the animal alphabet. It's so cute. So cute. I
Oh,
can't
gee.
decide which is my favorite. So tell let's just talk about fabric designing, because you were also known for which is kind of how I found you, was the fabric designing. You're taking your just wonderful, adorable images and putting them there. How did that start for you? How did you get into fabric designing?
Well, I was always fascinated with fabric design just because I didn't know how to do the repeat patterns or any of that. And I'm like, wow, that's magic that people can do that. I have to figure that out. So it was always kind of in my head. But it was because of this trade show, the first trade show that I went to, that really put it into motion. Because I knew I had the alphabet of these embroidery patterns. And I'm like, I have to make something out of this to show them off. And I thought, oh, I could do a quilt with all of them on. And I'm like, I'm not gonna go to this show and have other people's work, with the patterns. I have to make my own fabric for this. And that was about the time when Spoonflower was getting going too. So I just decided to design a collection, and it was actually later turned into Safari Suite, which was my first collection. I printed out enough to make this quilt and made this quilt up. And after that, I got a couple calls from some fabric places, and the rest is history after that.
So who I know, I mean, I just like I'm sitting here with my jaw hanging open. Totally awesome. So who's your fabric?
that was the biggest thing, that first trade show. I mean, really made a difference in the company for sure.
So tell me, who's your fabric line with, and why did you select organic?
It's with Clothworks Textiles, and I went with them because they were doing organic. It was something I hadn't really thought of too much before, but then I realized, you know, most of my stuff is going to be, it's going to have all these little animals on, and it's going to be used mostly for kids' wear and just things for babies and kids. And the whole fabric making process is pretty chemical intensive, with, you know, just pesticides on the cotton all the way through the process to the inks and all that. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to be doing this fabric, I want something that's going to be, you know, basically guaranteed safe on a kid's skin. So that was really important to me. And when Clothworks came to me that they were going to start an organic line, I'm like, I have to do it. That just makes sense.
Yeah, that does make total sense. Do you have a favorite so far of the ones that you've drawn?
Let's see. Well, I'm really excited for the next one, but I can't really say what that one is yet. But I'm also super excited for Critter Patch, which is going to be shipping any week now, really. I just got a photo from Clothworks of all the Critter Patch on the rolls, and I'll post that later on the blog. But it's just so fun to see it in that form before it gets folded onto the bolts and everything. So I'm pretty happy about that and excited for that to get out in the world.
Yeah, and I like the under the water one because, you know, I like sort of water stuff. So I'm always drawn to that one. I'm like, aw. So tell me just real quickly what goes on at your website, because you have a few sort of free things people can see what your stuff is like.
Yes, so I have a free pattern when you sign up for our newsletter, and that's it's based on our last fabric collection, Picnic Pals. And that's it has a lot of cute little animals, and it's a nice way to get into embroidery. And then we also have our new book that just came out in June, Sew and Stitch Embroidery. So we're going to be doing a blog tour for that coming up on October 7th, and I'm just really excited for that. We're doing a lot of planning for that right now.
Yay!
And can see all the fun happenings that we're doing in the studio on our Facebook and blog, and we're everywhere out there, basically all the social media land places.
Yeah, so people can find you where they like to hang out. They can just go to penguinandfish.com, and then you have all the links. Elisa, this has been so wonderful. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on.
This is Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Christian Brown is going to join me. She's the author of 2 books on embroidery and ribbon work, and they are just amazing, just filled with incredible detail that just makes, you know, just blows my socks off. I'm just not even sure how she even does this stuff, but she's going to tell us. She is an artist and a designer, a technician, a crafter, a writer, and a poet. So I'm really excited to have Christian join me. So thanks for being here, Christian.
Thank you for having me, Pat. I'm so excited to be here. well, you know, here and then with you.
Yeah, you know, this is just your work. When I look at it, I'm like, whoa, you know, the amount of detail. I love it. Can you first just tell me the difference so everybody gets on the same page? Because when we were chatting before, you were telling me, you know, there's a difference between embroidery and ribbon work, which are your two different books are about.
Right. Embroidery is something we're all familiar with, where you take ribbon, or you can a specific ribbon or a thread, you insert it into a needle, and then you stitch it into fabric with an embroidery stitch to create a flower, leaf, or other shape. But mm-hmm. ribbon work involves stitching a length of ribbon, a specific length of ribbon, with a needle and thread to form a flower, leaf, or other shape. And it's a separate entity. It's a separate design or individual unit. And then that can be applied to a quilt or to clothing or to a mixed media project.
Oh, okay. All right. So, I mean, I was always sort of lumping that all together, but it's really interesting to know that they're very distinct types of work. Have you always made things since you were little?
I've been embroidering since I was 7, so mm-hmm. almost 50 years, long time, and sewing my own clothes since I was 14, so... Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And has your style changed? Have you? I mean, I know since you were 7, it probably has, but you know, like
oh, maybe a little.
A little, yeah. Have you stayed for a while now in one style, or has it been more recent that you've gone to this?
As far as the ribbon work, or
mm-hmm. yeah, the ribbon and embroidery, sort of all this detailed, beautiful detailed pieces.
Actually, I always did the detail part. That was always my favorite part. Actually, sewing the clothes or was not my favorite part. It was just the details that I was really interested in. But as far as my style has improved, I hope, because I've learned a little bit more than I knew at 7. So in that aspect, it's changed.
So, you know, it was really funny when we were writing back and forth about, you know, the focus, and I was asking, you know, what are you passionate about? And you were like, you know, really, you're talking about you like more buttons, more beads, more embellishments.
The more, the better. More. And purple. I love purple.
Oh, and purple. Purple. Okay.
Yes.
So I'd love to know how you approach, because anybody that looks at your work can see that you're using a lot of different materials, you know, so there's a quantity going on. So you have that variety. How do you sort all of this to keep track of it?
Well, if it has a specific job, so if I've purchased it for a reason, then it goes in the box that the rest of the reasons are in. So I start with a theme, or I start with an idea, and then I gather everything and put it into that box or bag, and that's where everything ends up. And when I feel the bag is full or the box is full, then I start looking and seeing what I need to improve on or add more to, and when I feel I have enough, I start the project.
All right, so when your projects are done, what do you do with the overflow? Because it doesn't all go in the project, I'm assuming. You know, how do you store that?
Well, as far as beads and buttons, I may have just a box full of that one color.
Okay.
And or a grouping of colors, and that's where they go. And truthfully, I'm not much for the plastic bins that are so so wonderful to organize things with. I use old jewelry box tops and caps mm-hmm. and all kinds of things to put the beads in. So,
do you have a large space to work in?
No, my workroom in the house is a bedroom that was turned into my workroom. It's 12 by 12. Not very big.
Okay, so you're thrifty with your space, I bet.
It is. I only allow a certain type of person into that room because most people just look at it and go, oh,
yeah.
There's so much in here. How do you know where it is? And so I don't want to shock people, but people that understand can go in and go, oh.
Yeah, they open all the drawers and touch everything.
Yeah, that's a rarefied person that could really understand that there's, you can actually do something with all of that stuff. So
now, which of your, tell us the title of both your books.
The first book was titled Ribbonwork Gardens. And the second book is entitled Embroidered and Embellished.
Okay, these are from C&T.
From C&T, yes.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about the current book that's out. What is in it?
Embroidered and Embellished started with four forms of embroidery. There were four pieces that we looked at that had different types of embroidery. One was traditional stitches, which you would find on most crazy quilts. The second was silk ribbon embroidery, using that specific ribbon to embroider with. And then the third was textured stitches, which some are Brazilian, some are tatted, some are just traditional stitches that are raised, some are woven, and then beading and translating beads into traditional stitches and also using specific stitches that were designed for beadwork on fabric.
And do you have, you have the designs in there, you know, how to do them, but do you have projects then so that people can kind of practice on something that you're giving them?
Yes, there are two projects per category. There's a smaller project that is something that you could get done in a weekend. And then there's a wall hanging, which is a bit larger, probably would take you a little bit longer to make. And I tried to design it so that the smaller project would entice you to go on to the bigger project. So you could feel comfortable, you know, if it was something new, feel comfortable that you could accomplish it and then move on to something larger. And then there's a gallery of other pieces to hopefully inspire you to move on and go your own way.
And you have about, over 80 stitches in there, right?
There are 85 stitches. There were 20 per category, and then there were some other embellishment types of things that you would use for finishing the projects. So, and all of the stitches were photographed. I photographed all of the stitches, and on this one, I photographed the ribbonwork projects too. But on this one, I had to buy a new camera because ribbon is much wider than pearl cotton.
Yes.
So I had to get a specific camera that could capture that. So I learned something on this book too.
A lot of detailed photos then. You had to get up close and everything. Now, you do some traveling to teach. So if people wanted to sit with you personally and learn from you, where do you normally teach at?
Well, normally I teach online, so they couldn't do that, but I do teach for joggles.com, but I will be in Houston for Quilts International, so I am teaching three classes there, and then I'll be teaching for Road to California in January, and I have three classes there as well, so.
That's awesome.
I'm pretty excited about it.
It's Kristen, Christen Brown, oneword.com, and you've got links to all that stuff there.
Tell
me, what is there like a beginner project that people could try this? You have something on your website, a pattern or your book, for someone who just wants to get their feet wet and learn about it?
For the embroidered and embellished, I suggest there's a sampler that opens each of the chapters. And if they practice on the sampler, that would just give them an idea of how the stitches are made and or worked. And that would, they're actually kind of fun little samplers that could be made into a wall hanging or something to have for themselves. And as far as Ribbonwork Gardens, the beginning chapter works with the 14 stitches that the rest of, or techniques that the rest of the book is developed from. So that would be a good place to start too.
Ooh. So here's the $100 question. I'm sure everybody asks you, you know, that doesn't really do handwork. Do you get asked a lot, how long does it take to make these?
all the time. And I used to actually, I mean, I thought this was really important. So I would write down every minute, every hour, every day.
Oh,
and some pieces I know have taken me over 500 hours to make. And when I would say the actual time, they would just look glazed, you know, give me that glazed look in their eyes. So now I just say it takes a lifetime. Every minute of every day goes into what I do. I learn something every day. So it's a lot easier to say that.
Right, right. And they get
and
a
they
little,
don't think I'm some crazy lady that sits for hours and hours with my cat stitching away. This way I look a little bit more normal,
right?
Hopefully.
Right. It's sort of a tongue-in-cheek, but in reality, those of us who make things, we know that you're right. It does take a lifetime. Well, you know, Christian, this has been just so wonderful. I'm just really blown away by your work. It's incredible.
Oh, thank you. And your work is incredible, too. I mean, I just love all the colors and everything. It's so happy. It's happy work. And
thank you so
much. I appreciate that you had me on the show.
Well, I want everybody to visit you at christianbrown.com and take a look at her blog and her books and everything she has to offer. We will be back right after this break with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And when we come back, we have a brand new guest.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting, Pat Sloan. Joyce Weeks is the designer behind Jeff's Mom's Quilt Patterns. I'm sure that many of you have seen her designs. They're just really fun. They're great projects that you want to work on. They're kind of quilts like, you know, everybody wants to make when you see Joyce's patterns. And I just thought, you know, it'd be really fun to have Joyce come on and talk to us a little bit about how she got her business started and who the heck is Jeff. So, hi, Joyce. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me. You're making me laugh. Who's Jeff?
Yes, exactly. Well, who's Jeff?
Jeff is my only child, my favorite child. Anyway, he's 30 now, but, you know, growing up, everybody called me Jeff's mom, so that's how I came up with the name.
Well, there you go. See, it's not such a big mystery. Do people wonder when they meet you in person, do they actually call you Jeff's mom, like, instead of Joyce?
Yeah, well, it's funny because now when I go into quilt shops, I mean, they don't know who Joyce is.
Right.
Oh, you're Jeff's mom, you
right.
know, and I, yep, that's me. So,
oh, that's
yeah.
It just goes on and on. So tell me, Joyce, a little bit about how you got started quilting.
Well, my grandmother quilted. My mother just did some embroidery, but she didn't ever quilt, per se. She said she tried, and everybody picked out her stitches, so she quit. So, anyway, I come from a family that, you know, everybody stitched back in the day. And so I used to have an Aunt Belle. In fact, the quilt behind my picture on your thing is named after my Aunt Belle, Mary Belle.
Oh.
So that's how I got started. I would, you know, sit under her quilts and watch her quilt.
Oh, how neat is that? Yeah, I don't have quilters in my family, so I'm always, you know, quite envious for people who grew up with quilters, you know, in their families.
Yeah, it's
really
wonderful
nice.
Memories.
Now, have you always worked in the style that you're working in now?
Actually, no. Let me tell you a story. When I first started, I thought everything in the world had to match my house. And at that time, it was peach and blue.
I
did was peach and blue. And I refused to do anything in a different palette. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I started looking at antique quilts, and I started thinking, why am I doing them all in this peach and blue? There is green and red, and so that's how I started. I just decided that peach and blue wasn't all that was out there.
Well, we're probably all really happy that you discovered that.
Yeah, it's a new era, but I love traditional work. I just absolutely love it. I will look at old quilts, mm-hmm. antiques. I just think that's what I want them warm.
Yeah, I'm so with you on that. I love antique quilts. They're so inspirational. Did you all of a sudden discover like reproduction fabrics? Do you use a lot of reproduction fabrics to get the look that you want?
I do, and I found that my palette, it's been very interesting because I started quilting over 30 years ago, and some of the fabrics that I still have in my collection are old, and when I pulled them out, I noticed that I was tending to go to the warmer reproduction fabrics. So I have stuff that I've kind of watched over the years come through and go, you know, I mean, it's like prints are the same, the little calicos.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, I'm drawn to all of them.
Yeah. Do you sort them a certain way? I mean, what is your method of keeping track of your fabric?
Oh, my gosh, if you could see my sewing room. I am not real neat and tidy. I've tried. I've had friends help me. Well, I have the plastic bins. I have everything in colors. But then I have these laundry baskets, the wire laundry baskets.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and I've just filled them full of scraps. My favorite is scrap quilts. And so I will pull from mm-hmm. those fabrics. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get more organized and in color, but I'm not one of those neat and tidy, put it all in a pile and only draw from this, and this. I have to dig.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to clean up after and then dig again.
Well, I think we all feel good about that, knowing that, Joyce, you know.
I mean, it's as hard as I try to be organized, I have to admit, I can't do it.
So do you put your bins on a shelf then, or are they just...
I do.
Okay, so you have a way...
Yeah, I have a big closet, and I have a bunch of bins in there with, you know, and most of mine are now Civil War reproductions, because that's where I've been more drawn to. But I do have wool. I love working in wool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's awesome, isn't it? It just feels so nice.
Yeah.
Just touching wool is like heaven. I just, I agree. I don't work in it enough. I used to do it more than I do now. But yeah, beautiful wool. So when you're getting ready to work on, you know, design a quilt, whether it's for mm-hmm. a trade show or just, you know, for fun, whatever, what is your design process?
Well, it's mainly I meander. My friends all say, you know what, you walk around and we can see smoke coming out of your brain. And I look through magazines. I look on Pinterest. It's just addictive. And I see old things, and I want to figure out how could I make that quilt different, combine different blocks. You know, I enjoy the process of the whole thing. And I'll sketch it in a little book, kind of. I have one of the graph books, and I sketch down kind of what I want to do. And that's how Jeff gets my sketches.
Okay.
And he has to turn it into the pattern.
Oh. So he helps you with the pattern.
Yeah, he does all of the pattern making, the design. He does all of the computer, whatever, you know.
He
knows now what a flying geese is and a nine patch and a, he said, I never want to do this, but.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, it's
he was
nice
born
help.
To
it's...
do it.
Yeah, sometimes there's just too much for one person alone to take it all on with a business.
Right.
Yeah. So, that's really neat. So you, when you're picking your fabrics, you know, because you like to do scrappy, are you sort of dumping it all out? And because you say you love to dig through it, but do you kind of like put it all?
Yes, I do.
Table?
I kind of dump, and then I'll pull pieces that I like. Mm. So I will pull out. Oh, maybe I want 20 greens, so I will pull out greens and pull out reds. And pull out my different colors. Now, and the reason it's really, I buy the ugly fabric. That's what my mom used to always say. She says, why are you buying that? That is so ugly. And I said, well, ugly to you isn't ugly to everybody. And I have some pieces that if you looked really close, you'd wonder why I bought it. But I tend to like prints that you wouldn't expect in a quilt.
Okay. Like what? Can you give an example? Like, is it like an ugly
There's this
weird
really
color?
I found this kind of purple green with tan in it. And I purchased probably a quarter yard, and my mother was just, there's just no way. And it was a big print, but when I cut it down, and there was a little bit of turquoise in it. And so I will sew that piece, say, into a flying geese. And you'd never believe what it'll look like.
That magic.
Right? Magic. Yes. Absolutely.
Wow. You know, there are some people who, you know, like you, Joyce, who have that vision, you know, for the unattractive fabrics. I'm not sure I'm good at it.
We can't call it ugly, can we?
Yeah, we can call it ugly.
Unattractive sounds much better. Yeah. Well, I just think, I think of them as like little orphans out there, and I want to gather them all in and take care of them and put them in a quilt.
Now, you do, we've been talking a little bit more like focus maybe on piecing, but you also applique. What type of applique do you do?
I do needle turn applique, where I draw, I will sketch a piece, you know, a picture or whatever I decide. I sketch it, and then I trace it onto freezer paper. I just trace it, put it on freezer paper. You know, I take a white or chalk pencil, whichever, draw around, cut a scant quarter inch out, pull off that freezer paper, and needle turn it.
Yeah, I love needle turn. That's, if I do hand applique, that's the method that I also like. Do you prefer one over the other? Do you, or you sort of split, or half your quilts pieced, half of them applique?
They're probably split, half and half. I'm getting more into wool. Wool's a little bit faster because they're felted and you can just you know, buttonhole them on or however whip stitch you prefer. But I'll never leave my applique with fabric cotton. It's just so traditional that I can't. I did one at Last Market called Circle of Spring, and there's 12 blocks with tulips. And it's just one of my favorite quilts.
Oh.
I enjoyed putting every tulip on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cotton.
Look at that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Neat. So you also travel and teach, right? Because I mean, you also have another job besides this.
Well, very busy, I do. I was full time with the airline, United Airlines, mm-hmm. and now I went part time because I don't have time. But I do reservations, international reservations, luckily from my home, so it gives me time to, you know, create, still run my business out of my home. I teach. I went to West Virginia. I go all over. I just got back, too, from teaching at the San Diego Quilt Show. That was really fun. I'm going to Brazil in a couple of weeks.
Wow.
And I'm going to get together with some ladies, and we're, you know, going to put on a little workshop, and just, I just love it. I have a friend that lives down there, and she's trying to, she said, she doesn't quilt. She says, I don't know what words to use to translate. And I said, you know, we're all visual learners.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter where we go. We can show someone what to do with our quilting.
And she's going to learn a lot if she's going to translate for you.
She may decide to be a quilter.
That's right. Take some extra needles and fabric for her so she can she can join in. Do you have a quilt choice that you want to make? That's like, you know, I'm a quilter. I need to make this quilt. Sort of a masterpiece.
Do I have No, not a. You know, I always wanted to do a Baltimore album,
mm-hmm.
and then I thought, oh, not in this lifetime. But I'm so enthralled with all quilts. Really, mm-hmm. and even watching the modern quilts now, what they've done, mm-hmm. because I'm impressed when the you know, brights and modern can take a traditional pattern
mm-hmm.
and change it up.
Yeah.
Because we've got so many young quilters out there, and it's fun to see their work, too.
It is. It is amazing. You know, this has been so fun, Joyce, to have you on. I want to tell people your website. It's Jeff's Mom Patterns.
Patterns.com. And it's G-E-O-F-F. Poor Jeff. I did that. It's not J-E-F-F. It's G-E-O.
That's okay. I think he's quite modern with that. It's awesome. Thank you for being here, Joyce.
Hey, thanks for having me, Pat. You have a great day, everyone.
Looking
we'll be
for
right
fresh,
back.
Simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to Facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and Leah Day is back this month to talk more about machine quilting. She and I have been doing this every month, so you can go back and hear all kinds of different details about machine quilting in sort of more in-depth. So we're kind of taking topics each time, each month, and doing a little deeper discussion on them. And this time we're going to talk about thread color choices and some density of your quilting, you know, what that does. So hi, Leah. Welcome back.
Hey, Pat. Nice to be here.
So, what do you actually, just tell me first, what are you actually quilting on? Do you have anything under the machine right now?
I do, actually. I have a very large whole cloth quilt. She was originally white. I dyed her maroon, so she's really dark red right now, and then I'm quilting over that with white thread. So think red fabric, white thread, and you've got contrast. You've got an amazing amount of thread play. This quilt, I'm actually thread painting sections of it. So it's really, it's a really elaborate, I've had to take several breaks. So it's taken more than a year to get it together. But I'm really hoping to get moving on it and have it done by 2014.
So can people see your progress? Do you have a special place you're posting pictures about it?
Absolutely, yeah. I post about this particular quilt pretty much weekly. I've been taking kind of a break for the last couple of weeks, but you can definitely check out the updates on the Free Motion Quilting Project. That's freemotionproject.com.
Okay, fantastic. You are like the bravest quilter I know. White on red. I am like, let's match that thread color, you know, like.
Well, so, when you think about it, and if you've ever actually experienced contrasting and contrasting sharply like that, where you're boldly contrasting your thread on top of your fabric, if you're choosing a lighter color on top of a darker fabric, you're actually doing yourself a favor because you can see what you're doing. You can see where you've quilted. And for some reason, the darker fabric is much more forgiving than a lighter fabric and darker thread. For some reason, the darker fabric, it looks better. So if you're going to contrast at all, I would always recommend going, looking at your fabric color first and saying, okay, is that dark, medium, or light colored? And if it's a light color, just go ahead and blend it. Or go with a medium. If you want to contrast anything, go with a medium color thread. If it's a medium or a dark color fabric, go with a lighter color thread. And I think you're going to enjoy the process of quilting it so much more because you're going to be actually able to see what you're doing.
Yeah, that is really true. I do match. Well, I use a lot more prints, you know, because I'm doing either piece blocks with a lot of printed fabric. And even there, it's really great to show at least some color difference rather than just totally blending in, because you do all that work and you don't see anything at all.
Yeah, you don't get any credit for it. I mean, what's the point? I mean, if I'm going to sit there and you know, sit down and quilt for 3 hours, I really want people to see it. I want them to be brained over the head with it. I mean, I wanted to knock them out. I mean, I want to get some credit for my work. So, yeah, contrasting. And then, too, I feel now, having spent so many years contrasting thread, and I mean, 90% of it, the reason I started contrasting, the reason I started quilting with white thread on top of black and really bold colors is because I was teaching on video and I was getting complaints. You know, people could not see what I was doing. And so it was an easy decision to start quilting with white thread. I mean, of course I had that fear of everyone seeing my mistakes and everyone nitpicking me and saying I wasn't a good quilter, but the opposite happened. Everyone thanked me for showing that kind of stuff and being real about it. But now, having, you know, had all these years of doing this, I look at, you know, when I try and match thread, when I try and have a color dead on the same color as the fabric, I can't see what I'm doing. And I forget where I've quilted. And so it's actually a struggle for me to go back to that kind of more, I guess, typical way of approaching machine quilting. So I really believe in contrast. I think it's a good thing, not a bad thing.
Yeah. I do want to touch on thread color for variegated threads. I'm sure we've talked about this during the year before, but I thought I'd touch on it again because I was just teaching and I do a thread talk during part of that. And I always like to share with people with the variegated thread that if you're going to use it, check the colors that are it's variegating from, you know, whether it's changing colors or whatever. But you want to be sure, like, none of those colors really are a dead-on match, because I'm sure, Leah, you've seen the same thing. If you have a dead-on match and you're variegated to your background, all of a sudden it looks like you didn't quilt anything.
Yep, you know, it looks blotchy. It looks blotchy. I'd say my favorite variegated of all the different threads out there is YLI variations. They're real subtle color changes. So, like, I'm just off the top of my head, I think the ocean color is like a light blue, a slightly medium darker blue, and then a white. And so it ranges through those colors and back again, and it's very subtle changes. And I love that. When something changes from, like, orange to purple, it's noticeable, it's garish, it's gross. I'm sorry. I just don't like variegated threads. If there's anywhere you can stick stuff like that, it's on a baby quilt where there's 50 million colors anyway. Right. So if you're wanting to practice and you're wanting to hide that stuff somewhere, do it there. But honestly, I really don't like variegated threads, period.
Well, some of us do. So those of us who do, we can. But do test them. That's the one thing I'd like to share with people is that, you know, you can't assume what it's going to look like, because the variation, you need to see it stitched out. And so a little sample and being sure that you're happy overall before you start doing a whole lot of work with it and then figure out it's not really your thing. The other thing is I do a lot of applique, so I don't like to outline the applique in the variegated.
Why not? Because it changes color. Yeah, you want to do a solid color for that.
Yeah, so I outline with a thread that matches, because I'm just trying to give definition to the applique and to let it, you know, maybe pop up. I don't worry so much about quilting in a shape, because I have a lot of very large shapes, like a pumpkin that's the size of a piece of paper. It needs to have quilting inside, usually lines to, you know, simulate pumpkin texture. But I want to outline that pumpkin with a thread that matches the background. So I just give it a relief and give it that sort of extra little oomph. So that's another thing that I learned by outlining with variegated thread. And I didn't like it because it was changing too much and it was being a focus I didn't want. Let's talk about density. Density of quilting. You are really good at this.
Yeah, this might get me in more trouble too. You want to talk about bravery? Well, there's two sides of it. The one side is I love dense quilting because I think it's intense and it's it really takes a design. So let's say you have a texture like McTavishing. It's a beautiful design created by Kara McTavish, and it's so flowing and fluid, and you put that on a dense scale, and you stitch that around an applique like you just designed, and you've got something that basically looks like wind, and you've got that gorgeous texture. And if you subtly contrast your thread, so let's say you do a blue thread on top of a slightly darker blue fabric, absolutely looks like wind behind your pumpkin or whatever we were going for. Density is not a sin. So if, you know, you have a wall hanging, if it's meant to hang on a wall, you can go dense on that, as dense as possible, and it's going to look 10 million times better than if you leave it really adding by just stitching it in the ditch. You're not adding any extra design or any extra texture by having just it very, very open and sparse. The other thing to think about is that you get so much more practice by quilting densely. And again, this goes back to wall hangings. You know, if you're making that for the wall, then obviously no one can sleep under it. And obviously, it depends on who's coming to your house. If it's a quilter coming to your house, she's going to look at the back. But if it's mostly your family, not quilters, they're only going to look at the front. They're not going to see your mistakes. So you can get a lot of practice and a lot of bang for your quilting very densely. And I'm not talking like a half inch scale. I'm talking an eighth of an inch scale. That's an eighth of an inch. You're going to be like a rock. You're going to get so much more practice stitching. So many more yards of thread will have been used up in your quilt. So many more repetitions of design. So I highly recommend it. Now, of course, a lot of people want a soft thread quilt, but really I think that has more to do with batting
than it does with thread or with density. I think that, you know, if you're using a poly bat, that's not going to shrink as stiff. So if you quilt it densely, it's going to be stiff. So it comes into your batting choice. If you choose a cotton bat, no matter how densely you quilt it, it's going to soften, it's going to shrink, and it is going to end up as a softer quilt. So I wouldn't be afraid of it. I'll put it that way.
Well, you know, I do like dense quilting. I probably haven't gone as dense as you were just describing just because I haven't. And now I want to try it for sure, Leah. I think that's really cool. But I do love dense quilting. I think it's pretty fun. I think it gives a whole lot of interest. And like you said, when you're wall hangings, table runners, anything you can you're not going to cuddle because they'll be a little firm when you're done if they're
Yeah, I love it. But, you know, when you look back at quilts, the way they were hand quilted back in the day, we had to have, you know, 22, 25 stitches per inch hand quilted to hold the fibers together because we didn't have these wonderful needle punch battings and stuff. And so that was the mark of a good quilter, of being able to make those tiny, tiny stitches. And so our traditional quilts were actually very densely quilted, and especially in comparison to what we're doing these days. So I think that even our bed quilts could stand a little bit more quilting and not be too stiff, not be uncomfortable, I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Now, I agree. I have one quilt that's a bed quilt, and it's more densely quilted because I guess I was just on a frenzy, you know, and it's been washed. It has that one actually has a wool batting in it, and it is not stiff. It is not fluffy because there's a lot of quilting. So, you know, I think it's a good thing to practice and get that level that allows you to still have a soft quilt for the ones at times you need it, but to practice. That is just so, that's such a good tip, Leah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Neat. You know, we're about out of time, so, you know, we're going to have to continue on with something else next month. How's that sound?
Sounds wonderful. I can't wait.
Okay, great. Thank you. This is just talking with Leah Day from leahday.com about free motion quilting and density and everything else. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. Come back next week, and we'll be right here, allpeoplequilt.com and my site, patsloan.com. We will have a brand new show.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and